All right, we are getting started.
Listen in to the Forum at St. James Church. Today, we continue our series on the unlikely heroes of Scripture.
Our theme this summer is unexpected characters in the Bible story, people whose names you might not remember, people whose stations in life meant that they wouldn't be necessarily the ones that their friends and families thought God was going to choose. Unexpected characters in God's story who went on to play a tremendous role in Scripture and really teach us lessons. So the last 2 weeks we had Hagar and Ishmael and then Esau. So they're stories that can be a little ancillary to the main story. You recognize all the names around them. Abraham, Sarah, Jacob, Rachel, Leah, Isaac. All these characters who what they were up to was the main story. And then you have these fascinating chapters off to the sides. Today we're going to learn about someone whose story is really smack dab in the center of the Israelite experience. And without this woman, I don't know what would have happened. It wouldn't have been good. because let's set the scene. Today we are learning about Rahab. So to set the scene for Rahab, the Israelites had escaped slavery in Egypt. They had gotten over their trouble with the golden calf. They'd received the Ten Commandments. They had walked and walked and walked and came to the Promised Land. What happened the first time they got there? Can anyone remember? No, no fighting yet. The first, they wanted to go back. Yes, Jenny got it. They wanted to go back. So the Israelites get through the desert. They get through trials and tribulations. There's no 40 years yet. They got right on through. And they took one look at Jericho and said, "You've got to be kidding us. God, we don't believe that you've brought us here. This is not what you wanted for us. We would surely die if we tried to approach this place, this well-walled city." You might remember the walls of Jericho. "You have got to be kidding us. We want to go back to Egypt. We want to go back into slavery." And so God said, "All right, you'd like to go back? Why don't you take a little time?" It's basically kind of a terrible time out. God sends the Israelites back into the desert to basically learn patience, learn trust in the Lord. And during the 40 years that they spend wandering the desert after they refused the Promised Land, Moses dies, and it means that a new leader has to step in to get them through sort of the next shift in their journey. Does anyone remember Moses' successor? Oh, we all read The Path not that long ago. We'll clearly reread it soon. Joshua. The brother Aaron was a huge help to Moses all the way through, but Moses' successor was Joshua. So they get back to this walled city of Jericho. Joshua says, "We're not going to make the same mistake this time. We're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, no matter how terrifying the gift seems to be, this well-walled, well-fortified, well-protected city." And this is where Rahab enters the picture. Does anyone know what Rahab did for a living?
A concubine
was the first elegant word Patricia used. A prostitute. Rahab was a prostitute. So Joshua is trying to figure out, it's all right, Wadi, come on in.
Sorry.
Joshua's trying to figure out, how are we gonna get spies into this city to figure out how we're gonna break down these walls? What's a good cover for spies? A prostitute.
Not a hurry.
Yeah, lots of visitors, lots of people coming in and out. It doesn't matter where they're from. Sort of a furtive journey. People aren't really keeping track. Discretion is key. Prostitute is kind of a perfect cover for spies. So, does anyone remember what happens when they go to see her? It's okay if you don't, because that's why we're doing this. They go in to see her, and someone has noticed these Israelites entering the city. It doesn't matter that they're trying to sneak in to visit a lady of the evening. Someone has noticed that they've come in. And so guards from the city come to Rahab's house. And so we hear about Rahab in the book of Joshua, the second chapter. So the king of Jericho was told, some Israelites have come here tonight to search out the land. Then the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come only to search out the whole land. But the woman took the two men and hid them. Then she said, true, the men came to me, but I did not know where they came from. And when it was time to close the gate at dark, the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you can overtake them. So Rahab has really, we don't know much about her motives at first. She's been told by the king, a person who has truly the power of life and death over her as a woman who lives at the margins of society, literally at the margins. She lives within the walls, within the city walls. She just knows that something is going on, and she is going to disobey the orders of her king. So she had, however, brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax that she had laid out on the roof. So the men pursued them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. So these guards go out looking for these guys. And by the time they realize they're not out there, they're not going to be able to get inside to let anybody know until the next morning. So Rahab has really brought some time here for these fellows. Before they went to sleep, she came to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land. This woman is not an Israelite. She's not a Jew. She's not a prophetess. She's not a queen. She's not a high-born person. She is a prostitute living in the city walls of the place these men have been sent to destroy. And the first thing we really hear her say to them is, I know the Lord, using the Hebrew for God, the way that the Israelites do, not Baal, not, you know, Asherah, not some other God. I know the Lord has sent you and given you this land. And so she says, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and the dread of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt in fear before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. Og, if you've ever wondered where that fake cave band name comes from, here. As soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no courage left in any of us because of you. The Lord your God is indeed the God in heaven above and on earth below. So Rahab is professing faith in the Lord, not because she's seen any of this, not because she herself was promised any of this, but because she merely heard about it. God has been performing miracles in the sight of the Israelites for years, and they have still not believed. And this woman, who would be discounted by basically anybody, says, I have heard of these deeds of power, and I know the Lord your God is the Lord God in heaven above. The Lord your God is indeed the God in heaven above and on earth below. Now then, since I have dealt kindly with you, swear to me by the Lord that you will in turn deal kindly with me and my family. So Rahab has professed all of this, and then she makes her ask in a way that it would be pretty impossible to refuse. Give me a sign of good faith that you will spare my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. The men said to her, our life is for yours. If we do not tell this business of ours, then we will deal kindly and faithfully with you when the Lord gives us the land. I won't keep reading, but you can finish the second chapter of Joshua and read the whole first part of Rahab's story. But so they make an agreement. They are so moved by what she's done for them. They make an agreement. If she ties a red cord to her window, they'll know it's her home when they approach the walls for their attack, and they will save her and her entire family. So Rahab has really professed her faith in God and also saved her entire family. So they tie this crimson cord. Does anyone remember what happened to the walls of Jericho?
Yeah.
They came tumbling down. They came tumbling down, but how? They blew trumpets. That's the Battle of Jericho. We sing that song, or a lot of people sing that song, Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. They blow trumpets. They walk around and around, blowing trumpets, singing songs, making noise. The walls collapse because of their tunes. And the part of the story that we don't usually tell is that the Israelite troops then rushed in and murdered every single person who lived in Jericho. Every man, woman, and child, every animal. Those were the rules of holy war. When you hear about things like jihad and we think that that's unique to Islam, no, no, my friends, that was shared among all the peoples of the ancient world. If you were engaging in a holy war to take over a land in the name of your God, you were to kill every single inhabitant of that land, man, woman, child, animal, plant, what have you. Except for Rahab and her entire family. So we hear about Rahab in the second chapter of Joshua, in the sixth chapter of Joshua. The second we meet her, in the sixth is the final destruction of the city, and we hear that she's saved. We also hear about Rahab in the book of James and the book of the Hebrews. She's lauded as a heroine of the faith. But there's one other time that we hear about Rahab. Does anyone remember? In the genealogy of Jesus. At the beginning of the book of Matthew, Rahab escaped with her family, went to live with the Israelites, left behind the life of a prostitute, married an upstanding man in the Israelite community, and gave birth to Boaz, who would become the husband of Ruth. And Ruth and Boaz would have Obed, and so on and so forth, all the way to King David and to Jesus. So if you read the book of Matthew, that genealogy at the beginning of Matthew, there's Rahab right there. Someone who, by every measure of how we judge the world then, how we judge the world today, would not be someone who is accorded any dignity, and yet God chose her to be part of the lineage of God on earth. So our story would never be the same because of Rahab, an outsider and a sinner, saved God's people, helped God's people move into the land that God had promised them, and showing us that she, along the way, was one of God's people. I think she really foreshadows the work that Jesus was coming to do on earth because she was a marginalized person. And marginalized people were always who God chose to meet first when Jesus came among us as a human being. And she also, I think, sacralizes a piece of human experience that is pretty important for us to look square in the face at this moment in time, which is that Rahab does what she needs to do to survive. I think this is a moment in our political and social life where we are being faced with the existence of a lot of people who are being moved by desperation. Desperation causes us to question their motives. I think about the photo of that man and his daughter who we saw this week. And a lot of people have said, well, why would you ever cross a river with your child? And all I can think of are the Israelites fleeing through the desert, crossing, thank God, a sea that God would part for them. And I think about someone like Rahab, who took a job to do what she needed to do to survive in a profession that we would normally disdain. And when God needed somebody to open, literally open their doors to his people, Rahab opened her doors and took her life into her own hands and did a very brave thing, completely and totally out of desperation. And I think that that's sometimes a motive that we misunderstand or discount or regard with suspicion. And this is a moment in the Bible where we see it face to face and are forced to recognize the sacredness of it, that God really gave us our lives as a gift. And there are times where people do what they need to do to save their lives, trying as hard as they can to be faithful people and care for everyone around them. And we have to recognize the holy motive in that and our role in that as allies and brothers and sisters of everyone on this earth. So that's the story of Rahab. Do we have any questions? Yes, Carol and then Alice.
Question, but I think it's a response to your presentation and the facts that you deal with.
that I would say that Rahab was enlightened, and that doesn't mean good or bad. Mm. That means inspired or something from within, or even a miracle from without. Mm-hmm. And we often think of motives. It must have been that extreme or that extreme. Mm-hmm. Yes. And when you think of the mother who was riding the back of another man in the water to get across behind them and to see her family die, this is a witnessing. And I think we have to think about that too.
Absolutely.
As, if you will, a further extension of what was happening now that it's been explained.
Yeah.
So thank you for this.
Thank you. I will admit that I had not planned to talk about that story. It's not anywhere on my note card. But I wrote down, she did what she needed to survive. And after listening to Matt's story and thinking about how we prayed for her today, it really, Valeria and her father, Alberto, it came to mind. So, Alice.
Now, I just wanted to thank you very much for the prayer, because it reminded, it was a chance to remind us all of what is going on and yeah. where love is needed. And yeah. I just feel so frustrated. I can't figure out what I could do to help.
Yeah.
But to see that father and that baby
yeah.
is an image I'll never forget.
Yeah. Thank you, Alice.
Very inspiring woman to have done what she did and saved the Israelites. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jenny?
Yeah. I agree that people sometimes have to do things out of a need to survive, an attempt to survive. But I think we also have to be careful, because you can justify all kinds of things mm-hmm. by saying you needed to do it. You can steal, you can mm-hmm. kill. So we have to be very discerning about using that argument.
Yeah. No, that's right. I kind of offered it without qualifications, and Jenny raises a good point that desperation and doing what one needs to do to survive can be used to justify all kinds of things that we would not condone as Christians. But sort of it's an interesting moment to look at the methods and look at the motives and also look at the human cost. Where is the risk? To Rahab, the risk was wholly to herself, though the Israelite spies did have to trust her. And I think that that too is kind of a good metaphor for the immigration situation, that we have to trust people when they are presenting themselves to us legally at our southern border to make a case for asylum and make a case for imminent threat and danger, which are the motives for asylum, and trust people who also are trying to come as immigrants, who are trying to come and make a life for themselves. There's a level of trust in the exchange, but also the toll. Rahab took the danger on herself. She had no guarantee that the Israelites were going to obey their promise, because, again, she was a woman of no account, she was a prostitute, and she was the enemy. And so by the rules of war put forth in the scriptures, the understanding of the time, they had every right to kill her. They had every right to break their promise. So Rahab really took a chance and put herself at the mercy of these people by faith, brought up her faith in God, and that she'd been clearly paying attention to these messages that had been coming in from travelers and people coming in and out of her home. And I think we also have to recognize the level of trust that people are putting in us when we say that there is a legal right to apply for asylum and that you are allowed to present yourself at a border crossing station and say that you have a credible fear for your life, to think about the fear that would make somebody do that, the fear that would make somebody risk their life, and the trust that they are putting in us to uphold our end of the bargain. It's already too far gone. I was gonna say, I don't wanna get too political. but the gospel is incredibly political, but what it isn't is partisan. And so I think there's a lot of room for discussion, as we hear in our political discourse right now, there's a lot of room for discussion about the right way to do this, a way that does not shelter people who are breaking the law, who are, you know, for example, engaging in trafficking and stuff like that, but also recognize that there are people who come here to do honest labor that American citizens have proved time and time again that we don't want to do. And that there are people who are coming here from a threat of violence from countries that we destabilized through our intervention, who are being terrorized in their homes by guns and ammo that are paid for by our drug habits. There's a relationship between Rahab and the Israelites that is forged through their violence. And she is putting herself at their mercy. And the more involved we are with one another as nations, the more that we engage with one another in this way, through selling arms, through buying drugs, through making laws, through having borders, like, the more that our relationships have to be governed by a true trust and a morality. So, Juzi?
I want to go a little bit back. Rahab was really a gift of God. Was inspired by God. God, the merciful, showed his mercy for Rahab, but also she was the mean to have the Israelis take Jericho. And that same mercy to a prostitute, if we go into Christianity, Jesus uses his mercy, the God mercy, also for Mary Magdalene. So there are always samples of this. If we go through the facts, of course, right now, we hope in a lot of miracles.
Yeah.
And we would like to be ourselves the mean of God to create miracles.
Yeah.
But the story repeats.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, we don't like the idea of the Israelis killing everybody. This happens very often in the Old Testament, but there was a goal there, the goal.
Yeah. You brought up two things. The first was this mercy, this lineage of mercy, which I find really beautiful. And what I was trying to say by Rahab being this marginalized person, a part of Jesus's genealogy who foreshadows the way that Jesus would come to be on earth. And also that Jesus himself had moments where he was sort of humbled and needed to learn. The Syrophoenician woman is a famous example in the Gospel of Mark, where because this woman is an outsider and another religion and another ethnicity, she comes to him and he says, "I can't take the food from the children's table and feed it to the dogs," meaning, "My mercy is for Israel. I don't have extra for you." And she said, "Master, even the dogs can lick the crumbs from underneath the children's table." And shows that, you know, you won't even give me a basic dignity, but I tell you, even in that, I have rights, sort of as a human being and a living being and a part of this created order. So even though Jesus was a figure of incredible mercy, there are moments where in his goal orientation, he missed sort of the humanity of others. And
that's an example too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
so
an example to show that you have to be merciful.
Yeah, even the most merciful person, in that God was fully human and fully divine, to ever live would sometimes fall short of the mark. And again, there's this trust engaging with God, and God, you know, always sort of pays that back.
That was his human side.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, tricky story. I didn't plan the end of this, so.
Yeah. I think it's a lesson, too, in how we pigeonhole people. We keep saying, Rahab was a prostitute. She was a prostitute. Well, that's what she did for a living. But I didn't know her as a person. Maybe she's a very nice person. Maybe she was good in other ways. So we say, because she was a prostitute, that's what she was. I think we think of people, you know, they have a certain color of skin or speak a certain language, come from a certain place, you pigeonhole them into a certain thing, but do we know them?
Yeah.
I didn't know Rahab.
Yeah. I mean, Ken makes a great point about pigeonholing. She's only on this list because she has a job that we would consider unsavory. That's the only reason Rahab is a part of this curricula. And I sort of made an assumption that you all wouldn't remember her, based on who she was. You know, sort of a tricky, we don't want to pigeonhole, but even in the way that we sometimes teach and share and remember these stories, we engage in it ourselves. So that's a really great point about needing to sort of be thoughtful. Juzi also said something about, you know, the death of all those people. The enormous death toll of some of these fights and battles in the Old Testament is a really, really incredibly difficult topic. and probably worth its own forum series at some point. How do we understand the violence of the Bible? If you're given to Google and you'd like to do some research on your own, there's an incredible Native American theologian named Vine DeLorean who wrote about the Canaanites and what does the idea of a promised land mean to a Native American who themselves were the victim of incredible violence and bloodshed because of a same sort of promised land mentality, motivated by the Christianity of white colonizers from Europe. So if you'd like to do some Googling, and I can go back into my files from seminary and try to find it and share with you all. I don't want to open a whole can of worms to argue about the fairness here, but it is undeniable that the way that the Israelite story is set up, the way that our story with God is set up, this sense that God has chosen all of us and tried to fight for us and give us what we need to survive in this world and tried to bring us into communion and community with each other, there are parts of that story that are difficult that we have to contend with. I had some final questions for Rahab. That was how I meant for us to end. that I guess I invite you all to sort of spend some time thinking about. Feel free to email me if you ever want to talk about these things. If you have ideas for further learning you'd like us to do in our forums. Why did Rahab do it? What can we learn from her? How might God have been active in her life before the spies came knocking? Sort of what Carol was saying about sort of being enlightened and open to hearing. What does it mean to be worthy to hear from God? And I offer that question to you in particular because I think a lot of us can sometimes think, you know, what makes me special that God might care about me? And a lot of folks here sometimes make a joke to me like, oh, well, you're a priest, so God. And it's like, I'm a priest, nothing. I chose this job because I realized that the only way I was ever going to be able to have a relationship of God, a relationship with God that was worthy of the time and love that God has poured into me was to make it what I did all the time. So I think we're all trying to feel worthy of God's love. And stories like Rahab and stories like this entire forum series remind us that God really truly has a love and an interest in all of us, and that there's no one too marginalized or too outside or too unexpected to play a part in God's story. So thank you.
It's also a question of timing. When we say, oh my God, it doesn't help me, it's a question that we want to be right then and there in that particular, but time for God and his no limits.
Yeah.
So it might come in a different way at a different moment.
Yeah.
And we might realize it in a different moment.
That's a really great point. Juzi made a comment about timing and how God can, we might want something from God and God might not react in the way that we had thought. We sort of want things right now. We kind of want to call on God like we call an Uber. And that's not always how it goes. but almost sometimes through hindsight, you can realize that in a difficult moment, God was with you and you didn't even realize. Was there one more hand?
No, I was just going to say that I think one way to help ourselves not pigeonhole people is to focus on people who have gone through several sets of circumstances in life. You can at one point be, you know, a very, you know, something that everyone generally admires, and mm-hmm. then for whatever reason you're on the street. Mm-hmm. And if someone didn't know you through the whole trajectory, he or she could very well make judgments in, you know, by mm-hmm. looking at you here or by looking at you there. Mm-hmm. But if you know the person from, you know, throughout the period, you know it's not the intrinsic value of the person, it's the person operating within a set of circumstances.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Jenny's talking about how we have to remember that people encompass so much more than what we see of them the moment that we meet them. And sometimes we're blessed enough to know someone through an entire arc of their life, but you know, someone could have everything one day and be on the street the next, which we've witnessed just in the last few years in our own country with the ups and downs of our economy. We can't make assumptions about where anybody is from, how they got the way they are, the way that things have been for them. We don't know their story. If you met Rahab at the end of her life, a sort of respected, prosperous Israeli woman, and started making terrible comments the way that we hear people talk about sex workers today, she might feel real pain in her heart because as an Israelite, would unknowingly be utterly in her debt while denigrating the person that she was when she saved your life. So I think that's a great place for us to end with Rahab. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for bearing with me. We went there. Thank you all.
To learn more about St. James Church, visit stjames.org. That's stjames.org.